It's not just in fulfillment of my constitutional duty, but with great pride and respect for his many years of public service that I am today announcing my intention to nominate United States Circuit Judge Anthony Kennedy to be an Associate Justice of the Supreme Court.
It was November 1987 when President Ronald Reagan nominated Justice Anthony M. Kennedy to fill the seat vacated by Justice Lewis Powell.
He is known as a gentleman. He's popular with colleagues of all political persuasions. And I've noted he seems to be popular with many senators of varying political persuasions as well.
This week, on Wednesday, the last day of the term, Justice Kennedy announced his retirement. Kennedy, who is 81, will serve until the end of July. In an interview with C-SPAN back in 2009, Kennedy described the challenges of the job.
All the cases are hard. The only reason we take them, as some of my colleagues may tell you, is that other courts are in disagreement most of the time. And that means that other judges and other actors in the legal system have come to differing conclusions. Every case is that way.
For many years, Kennedy was the deciding force in those disagreements. Following the retirement of Sandra Day O'Connor in 2005, Kennedy was often seen as the sole swing vote on the bench. This is The Takeaway. I'm Tanzina Vega. And today, what's next for the highest court in the land in the absence of Justice Kennedy? Whether a new swing vote will emerge is unclear, as President Trump vowed on Wednesday to return to his initial short list of conservative justices to fill the post. And Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell promised a quick vote on the nominee by fall. Eric Posner is a law professor at the University of Chicago School of Law.
Justice Kennedy, in several cases, moved the court in the direction of protection of sexual minorities. And in Obergefell versus Hodges, he was the deciding vote where the court recognized a right to same-sex marriage.
And what about the preservation of Roe v. Wade?
Well, I think the Roe v. Wade case, which was called Planned Parenthood versus Casey, is probably his next most significant legacy after same-sex marriage. President Reagan appointed three justices, and I think most people thought that those justices would overturn Roe versus Wade, or at least conservatives hoped that they would. But in Planned Parenthood versus Casey, two of them, Justices O'Connor and Kennedy, voted to preserve the right to abortion, which had been recognized in Roe versus Wade. That said, Justice Kennedy in several other cases voted in favor of laws that restricted abortion somewhat, most famously a case involving what are called partial birth abortions, or sometimes called partial birth abortions. So his legacy is somewhat more mixed for abortion rights.
How did his ideology evolve over time? I mean, we just said he became sort of the swing vote, but did his own ideology evolve from where it was expected that he would take the court much further to the right than he actually did?
So his ideology evolved a little bit, but not as much as many people say. When he was nominated by President Reagan, I think most people understood that he was conservative. People didn't think he was as conservative as, for example, Robert Bork, who Reagan had nominated earlier and who had not been confirmed. But people thought that Kennedy would be pretty conservative. Within his first year or so, he was a relatively conservative justice. But quickly after that, he started voting occasionally in cases where he sided with the more liberal justices. But that happened relatively quickly, and I think his ideological stance on the court has remained relatively constant over the last, say, about 20 years.
Professor, you've also done research into something called the loyalty effect. Tell us what that is and how you think that might impact the president's next nominee.
Well, it turns out if you go back and look at how Supreme Court justices have voted throughout history, they tend to be quite supportive of the president who appoints them. So ideological drift does occur. It's actually quite common. But at least in the first few years, justices tend to support the government, you know, the government which is led by the president that appointed them. So while there are a lot of surprises, that seems to be a relative constant.
Now, there is a lot of concern, particularly among Democrats and non-conservatives, that the president has a list of nominees that are very ultra-conservative in many instances. Can you tell us a little bit about that list, who may be potentially the most concerning to folks?
You know, I'd prefer not to speculate about the ideological positions of the judges and other people on that list. I mean, you know, it's a little bit hard to tell. Obviously, Trump, like presidents before him, prefer to nominate people who they think will advance their political and ideological goals. That's been a pattern for a very long time. I do think that liberals should be concerned. It's pretty clear that President Trump will want to appoint somebody on the right, and definitely somebody farther to the right than Justice Kennedy was.
There is concern about specific issues that this court could take up again, at least among those who do not support the president. Some of those are, we've already mentioned, Roe versus Wade. There's also concern about other civil rights, including affirmative action. You said liberals should be concerned. How concerned and how realistic is it that we could see things like affirmative action targeted as well?
I think it's very likely, but somewhat hard to predict. I mean, when President Reagan appointed Kennedy and Scalia, many people thought that Roe versus Wade was going to be overturned. It wasn't. It's quite possible that President Trump will appoint somebody who he thinks is conservative and may really be conservative ideologically, but hesitates about overturning established precedents. On the other hand, I think it's equally likely that President Trump will appoint somebody who will go after a lot of these precedents. And I think at the top of the list would be Roe versus Wade. I think it's perfectly possible, even likely, that whoever Trump appoints will cast a vote to overturn Roe versus Wade. I think on affirmative action, it's quite likely that whoever Trump appoints will cast a vote to either narrow or even overturn previous cases that have held that it's permissible for state universities and other government entities to practice affirmative action.
And also, there have been lots of criticisms about how the Supreme Court, particularly with the recent rulings that we've seen up until this week, that the Supreme Court is increasingly becoming a tool of the presidency rather than a check on the presidency.
Yeah, although, you know, it's, I think, a little more complicated than that, because after all, the Supreme Court almost struck down President Obama's signature legislative achievement, which was the Affordable Care Act. Now, if it had, we would call that a check on the presidency. But I think, you know, liberals would have been very upset about that. I do think that, you know, the court's relationship with the presidency over history has been very complicated. And if you go back more than a couple decades, it has tended to be, you know, not much of a check on executive action, more of a check on state legislatures and in the last few decades on legislation enacted by Congress. But for example, when the president engages in military actions and other types of unilateral actions, maybe the court has not always been a tremendous check. That changed a little bit during the Bush administration when the court expressed some skepticism about the war on terror-related actions. But it may just be returning to the status quo.
We know that retired Justice John Paul Stevens once said, and I'm quoting here, that the political aspects of a federal judge's career should end when his or her nomination is confirmed. Do you think the court is more political now, given the divisiveness of the United States and everything that we've been seeing?
Oh, well, in some ways it's more political, but I think one needs to recognize the continuity. It's usually been the case throughout history that presidents have appointed ideologically compatible justices who have ruled in ways that are generally consistent with the president's ideology. And of course, there have been some important exceptions, but that's been the basic pattern, and it's been true for a very long time. What is true and what seems to be new is that the justices are divided along partisan and ideological lines in a way that is a lot more rigid and obvious than in the past. The Democratic appointees all lean left. The Republican appointees all lean right. There's very little overlap between them except on in relatively non-controversial cases. And this makes the court, I think, look more political in many ways than it has in the past. That might, in the long run, damage the court's standing in the public, but it's hard to predict.
Eric Posner is a law professor at the University of Chicago School of Law. Thank you for being with us.
My pleasure.
Hi, this is Julia from Clayton, California. I do think that Judge Kennedy's position should definitely be filled immediately with hopefully someone young, educated, empathetic, super sharp, and someone that knows the law inside and out.
Hi, my name is Eric. I'm calling from Brooklyn. And I think the Democrats shouldn't give an inch on this. I think they should do everything in their power to make sure that Trump doesn't get to pick the next Supreme Court justice. I'm 26 years old, and Republicans have won the popular vote once in my lifetime. And despite that fact, they have a stranglehold on the court. I think that makes no sense.
Hi, this is Joel from Queens. My guess is that President Trump is going to replace Justice Kennedy with one of the more moderate candidates on his published list.
This is Eli Savage from Portland, Oregon. Of course, it's frustrating. It also leads to questions of ethics. If the midterms lead to swing in the political makeup of the Senate and the House, do we do exactly what the Republicans did that was so reprehensible when they refused to nominate or even consider an Obama appointment? I mean, how do we take the high road when the conservatives are so craven and so without moral compass or conviction that they have no shame in their hypocrisy?
This is Mary from Queens, New York. The Democrats should not allow Justice Kennedy's seat to be filled until a Democratic president is in office, just like the Republicans did.
Dennis, Foxborough, Massachusetts. My answer to when the seat should be filled? Follow McConnell's rule after the election.
And we want to hear more from you about your opinion on Justice Kennedy's retirement. Call and leave us a message with your thoughts at 877-8-MY-TAKE.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here? And maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.